Hello, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Justin, in Flagstaff with Northland Views. Today is Wednesday, February 12th. I'll be reading from the Daily Courier, and here's today's first story. CCJ leader grateful for steadfast donors helping agency build affordable housing. The Coalition of Compassion and Justice is close to purchasing its first Paloma Village model, manufactured home in North Chino Valley, thanks to supporters who exceeded the $50,000 match from an anonymous donor provided to the nonprofit just before Thanksgiving. Unknown even to her, CCJ Executive Director Allison Lochner said that the donor's gift proved a kickstart of a financial campaign to launch the first phase of what will eventually be a 25 one, two, and three-bedroom affordable manufactured housing village for individuals and families who cannot afford the high rents and mortgages of the greater Prescott area. Those selected to live in this neighborhood will include those coming out of homelessness or struggling to pay existing rents and are eager and ready for a more stable, long-term housing community to live and raise their families, she said. The donor's challenge invigorated other community supporters to invest in what Lochner describes as a one-of-a-kind, 5 million, multi-phase village intended to offer the selected tenants a chance to live their dream. To be part of the residential community where they can plant a garden, frolic with their children on an outdoor playground, enjoy holiday barbecues with their neighbors. The money generated through the anonymous match is expected to be enough to invest in a three-bedroom model home that community members can visit to become more familiar with the look of the units and CCJ's overall village plan, Lochner said. Indeed, she said, the generated funds prompted by the match likely will allow CCJ to provide funds towards a second unit. The first phase plan is for 6 units Lochner hopes will be all in place and occupied by next year. Her ambitious hopes is the model and a second unit can be someone's home by the end of this year. The largest units cost about $100,000. The one bedrooms between 80 and 90 each, she said. Lochner's hope is that these first units will be on site sometimes mid-spring. The model will eventually be a family home, but Lochner said CCJ still needs to erect a $170,000 water tank before the units can be occupied. Lochner said that the anonymous gift that inspired further financial generosity couldn't have come at a better time. This was just the momentum we really needed to show the community that we are really doing this. This isn't just a thought in our mind. This is very tangible, Lochner said. Construction of Paloma Village has not been without its challenges, Lochner is quick to acknowledge. Amid a rainstorm, CCJ and its agency donors and supporters celebrated a groundbreaking ceremony in May 2023. Yet the project stalled a couple months later after CCJ fell victim to an embezzlement by a former employee whose legal case is continuing through the criminal justice system. In July 2024, after extensive forensic audits and new systems were established to protect against future financial malfeasance, construction at Paloma Village resumed. As of now, Lochner said, the village plot plan infrastructure, including sewer and all utilities, even some street signs, are in place, awaiting arrival of units and people to occupy them. Given the need for affordable housing for CCJ clients and others living on fixed or incomes below what is needed to cover market rentals or attain home ownership, Lochner said she wishes she could write a check tomorrow so people could move in immediately. Instead, Lochner says she takes pride in the village, now steady pace forward, all due to those across the community committed to seeing that Paloma Village becomes a reality. We are just so grateful, said Lochner of the agency that relies strictly on donations and foundation grants. CCJ accepts now state and federal funding because the strings attached often do more harm than good for people they wish to move out of poverty and into independence suited to their needs. Every day we see the need for this housing increase, Lochner said, and sometimes it's hard for me to explain why all this type of housing is so important. Lochner and other in the nonprofit and housing sectors are participating in some area workforce housing committee conversations that they hope bring about new options. The conundrum for the city is how to grow its workforce with potential employees can't find an affordable rent within a comfortable driving distance from their job. Prescott Unified School District and the City of Prescott do have one small workforce village on the Taylor Hicks Elementary School property. 4 2-bedroom units for teachers and 2 for city first responders, particularly police officers and firefighters. The rents are $1,200 a month, well below the $2,000 average for a 2-bedroom apartment in Prescott. Chino Valley Unified has 10 studio units for their teachers on property at Del Rio Elementary. Those rents are $550 a month. Yavapai College and Humboldt Unified School District are also now discussing potential workforce housing ideas to benefit their employees. Paloma Village is intended to welcome those already getting established in the community so they can move forward quicker, Lochner said. The hope is that affordable rentals lead to future tax-paying homeowners, a benefit to the entire area economy, Lochner said. In spite of everything that's gone with us and with the other nonprofits, we have people in our community willing to take a chance on us. They see what we're doing is making a difference, and that is huge. I couldn't ask for anything more than that. Former executive director of Prescott Downtown Partnership pleads guilty to fraud charges. Misty Jolene Smith, 48, who was accused in 2021 of stealing over $200,000 from the Prescott Downtown Partnership as executive director, changed her plea on fraud charges to guilty on Monday, February 10th, in front of Judge Deborah R. Felon at the Justice Center. Sentencing for Ms. First Smith is scheduled for 4 p.m. Monday, March 17th. She was remanded to the Yavapai County Jail on Monday, pending her sentence, which will include credit for time served. She will be transported to the Department of Corrections once her sentencing hearing is concluded. Detectives from the Prescott Police Department arrested Smith on suspicion of defrauding the organization on November 17, 2021. A lengthy investigation began October 2021. She was charged with 2 counts of fraud. Count 1 is a Class 2 felony, and Count 2 is Class 3 felony. The state will recommend probation for Count 1. However, the court can impose imprisonment for this count, according to Phelan. The investigation began when it was ascertained that Smith had failed to secure a license for the annual Arizona Wine Fest, which resulted in the cancellation of the event. Smith resigned shortly after. The PPD began examining finances and discovered a large number of checks and balances weren't adding up, and they alerted the police. "We're glad it's over, and we're glad we got a resolution and that justice was served," says Audra Yamamoto, corporate representative for the PDP. Fire still at 400 acres near Mayer, Pine Flats area on go status. Brady Fire still at 400 acres near Mayer, Pine Flats area on go status. The sheriff's office and fire agencies have been receiving questions about evacuation zones. To receive emergency notifications, please sign up for Everbridge Alert Yavapai. member.everbridge.net. For text alerts, text the phrase ALERT, capital Yavapai, to 888-777. To know your exact evacuation zone, visit prescott.genasys.com and enter your address. From Prescott National Forest, the Brady Fire is still about 400 acres north of Pine Flat on Bradshaw Road. The cause is under investigation. As of this morning, 146 personnel are on the fire, which is burning in brush and chaparral. It is 0% contained. Today, fire crews with the assistance of heavy equipment where feasible will continue to make access to the portions of the fire perimeter and construct lines along the fire's edge. The assessment of values at risk and protection of efforts will resume. With forecasted winds, crews will look for opportunities to slow the fire's progression to the north. Little growth was reported last night as cooler temperatures moderated the fire. The Brady Fire, which started Monday, February 10th, is burning west of Mayer, Arizona, near the community of Pine Flats. As dry fuels continue to be consumed, smoke will be visible from surrounding communities. For the health and safety of firefighters and residents affected, we ask that you please avoid the area around the Brady Fire. Yavapai County Sheriff's Office has closed County Road 177 into Pine Flat. Below normal temperatures are forecasted for today as an approaching storm brings 15 to 25 mile per hour gusty winds out of the southwest. No precipitation is expected today, but there's a chance of snow showers on Wednesday afternoon. Evacuations are in place for residents of Pine Flat. For current evacuation information and shelter locations, please call Yavapai County Sheriff's at 928-771-3260. For assistance in evacuation, please call 911. Firefighters will be using a full suppression strategy to achieve 100% containment of the Brady Fire. The Prescott Hotshots' several engines and Type 2 crew are on scene and have begun suppression efforts. The Brady Fire is estimated to be 400 acres and is burning brush and grass, according to the Arizona Emergency Information Network. Smoke can be seen from the surrounding communities, including Prescott, Chino Valley, Prescott Valley, and Crown King. Additional resources have been ordered, including air support. At this time, YCSO has put zones YCU-2174B and YCU-2216 in Pine Flats on go status. Leave immediately. Do not wait. Gather only essential items and leave as quickly as possible to ensure your safety. Visibility in the area may be reduced, and roads and evacuation routes can become blocked. If you do not leave now, you could be trapped or injured, and there is no guarantee that first responders will be able to assist you. Stay aware of the latest news and information from public safety officials and reputable sources. For current evacuation information, call Yavapai County Sheriff's at 928-771-3260. For assistance in evacuation, call 911 again. Please be advised that fire apparatus and emergency vehicles are actively operating in the area. We urge all residents and travelers to keep roads clear to allow these vehicles to maneuver. Exercise caution when driving and do not obstruct the path of emergency responders. Your cooperation is crucial in allowing them to reach affected locations quickly and safely. The American Red Cross has set up an evacuation shelter at Mayer High School, located 17300 East Mule Deer Drive, Spring Valley, for residents that have evacuated. Sheltering for barred animals is available at Arizona Downs, located at 10445 County Fair Trail, Prescott Valley, provided by Large Animal Sheltering and Emergency Readiness. Firefighters will be using a full protection strategy, suppression strategy, to achieve 100% containment in the Brady Fire, the cause of which is under investigation. The Yavapai County Office of Emergency Management reminds all Yavapai County residents of the importance of maintaining ready status, preparing for and staying aware of any possible hazards threatening your community. Register for the emergency notification system at www.ycsoaz.gov. Make an emergency evacuation and communication plan and follow reputable and reliable sources for information. Residents in the unincorporated areas of Yavapai County should visit protect.genasys.com. to identify their evacuation zone. Record this information and keep it in an easily accessible place within your home. For more information on how to be prepared for wildfires and other emergencies, please visit yavapaiready.gov. The vegetation fire was first observed burning near Big Bug Mesa in the old Goodwin burn scar, approximately 17 miles north of Crown King at about 3 p.m. Monday afternoon, February 10th. You're tuned in to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to Northland Views. Lawmakers introduce opposing bills on illegal immigration. Phoenix state lawmakers are proposing two diametrically opposed requirements on what state and local officials should be doing about illegal immigration. But the one sponsored by Senate President Warren Peterson is likely to get a hearing. The Gilbert Republican wants to mandate that county sheriffs and the State Department of Corrections enter into an agreement with the federal government to identify those in their custody who are not here illegally. And it also requires both to comply with detainer requests to ensure that they are not released in the interim. The measure has been assigned for a hearing before the Senate Committee on Military Affairs and Border Security. At the other extreme is a Democratic Immigrant Trust Act that would curb the ability of state and local police to stop, question, arrest, search, or detain any person based on actual or suspected citizenship or immigration status. And it would spell out that if police do pull someone over for a violation, they cannot detain them beyond what is normally would take to issue a citation to enable federal immigration officials to come pick them up. There are both House and Senate versions of that Democratic proposal, but neither has been set for a hearing. While the Democrats may not be able to force lawmakers and the Republican-controlled legislature to give their measure some consideration, they do have something working for them. Governor Katie Hobbs and a spokesman for the Democratic governor said that she opposes anything that effectively forces the state to use its resources for the federal program. Quote, "We should not have bureaucrats and politicians from Washington, D.C. decide what's best for our state," said Christian Slater. "We shouldn't tie the hands of Arizona law enforcement when the federal government is getting it wrong." More to the point, he said, mandate like what Peterson wants is unnecessary, saying the State Department of Corrections and some local governments already have voluntarily entered into these agreements to work with the federal immigration agencies. At the heart of the Peterson's proposal, dubbed the AZ ICE Act, for Arizona Immigration Cooperation and Enforcement Act, is what's known as 287G, that is provision in a federal law that allows state and local agencies to act as immigration enforcement agents. It requires certain training of officers to ensure they are aware of immigration laws as well as civil rights laws. What that includes is interviewing individuals to ascertain their immigration status, checking Department of Homeland Security databases for information, and using detainers to hold them until Immigration and Customs Enforcement takes them into custody. Peterson's SB 1164 would mandate that state and local police to enter these agreements and, by extension, become part of the effort to deport those here illegally. He has acknowledged there will be a cost to all this, including training, but nothing in his legislation provides any state funds. At the press conference Monday, Senator Catherine Miranda, Democrat Levine, Arizona, said that there may be situations where it is appropriate for police to hold someone for ICE if they're a dangerous criminal. "Focus on those violent criminals," she said, but Miranda said she fears that having all law enforcement deputized to enforce federal immigration law could lead to a racial profiling. Representative Cesar Aguilar said it's even more basic. He said that a strict detainer requirement is likely to sweep up parents and families with mixed legal status. "Those parents are not likely to commit crimes," Aguilar said. "So if they're getting picked up, usually it's a low-level crime," he said, "like travel infraction. But what we're starting to see is immigration showing up at their house in armored cars to deport them. Also being deported," Aguilar said, "are veterans." So these are not the people that Republicans are trying to make it seem that these are the worst criminals ever, he said. Peterson, whose bill is set for hearing this coming week, declined to address what Democrats said. But in a press release, he made it clear he believes that state and local law enforcement have a role in deporting those here not legally. And he cited figures from the Federation for American Immigration Reform, which seeks to end illegal immigration and reduce overall immigration levels of all types. It puts the annual cost of Arizona taxpayers for illegal immigration at $3.19 billion, including $1.36 billion for education, more than $631 million for police, legal, and incarceration, plus unspecified costs for health care, public assistance, and general government agencies. Ending the border crisis requires an all-hands-on-deck approach, he said. This common-sense legislation will not only allow federal and local law enforcement to work together to protect our citizens. There's the question of which approach Arizonans prefer, given that a majority of voters in the state supported President Trump in November. Aguilar acknowledged some of his own constituents voted for Trump. They don't know if it was going to get this bad as it's getting right now, he said. But the federal government not just focusing on deporting violent criminals, but anyone officers come across who lack legal status. That's what we're seeing on the news and social media is not, I think, what most Arizonans who wanted immigration reform were asking for, Aguilar said. And there's something else. Peterson also pointed out that voters also approved by a 3-2 margin Proposition 314, which makes it a state crime for those who are not citizens to enter Arizona at any other than a port of entry, permits state and local police to arrest anyone who crosses the border illegally, and allows state judges to order deportations. Senator Annalise Ortiz, for her part, said Prop 314 is irrelevant to the obligation of lawmakers to represent their constituents. Quote, we have a moral obligation to protect our community, to protect the people in mixed status families who are living in terror right now, who are afraid to call the police, afraid to take their child to school, who are afraid to drive to the doctors because they could be separated from their loved ones, says Phoenix Democrat. That's where her bill comes in. SB 1362 would make it illegal for law enforcement agents or officials to stop, detain, or arrest anyone based solely on that person's actual or suspected citizenship or immigration status. Ortiz said it would also bar police from asking someone's immigration status except in a rare cases where it's relevant to a specific criminal investigation. Also off limits would be using public money, equipment, or facilities to enforce any federal program that requires people to register based not only on immigration status, but also race, gender, sexual orientation, or religion. The legislation in HB 2807, an identical bill introduced by Democratic Representative Mariana Sandoval of Goodyear, also would forbid hospitals and healthcare facilities from collecting information about someone's immigration or citizenship status unless it's strictly necessary to determine if somebody is eligible for state services. That is aimed at SB 1268, sponsored by Senator Wendy Rogers, who would require hospitals that accept certain state payments to gather that information. The Flagstaff Republican said patients would be told their answers would not affect care nor result in filing a report to immigration authorities. Instead, it appears designed to put a price tag on services to those without legal immigration status. Miranda said the Democratic measures are and designed to ensure Arizona immigration community feels comfortable seeking medical assistance, reporting crimes, and completing their day-to-day activities without fear of deportation. Rodeo Roundup. Tickets available for College Rodeo Grand Canyon Regional Finale. Come and watch legends being made at the College Rodeo Grand Canyon Regional Finale. You'll see young champions in the making as they ride for themselves, their horses, their teammates, their coaches, and their schools. The Grand Canyon region is made up of 8 colleges across Arizona and New Mexico that are members of the National Intercollegiate Rodeo Association. PFD General Manager and College Rodeo Commissioner Jim Dewey Brown is bringing college rodeo to Prescott for the first time. The GCRF will be held Friday, May 2nd, and Saturday, May 3rd at Prescott Frontier Days, world's oldest rodeo grounds, with 6 p.m. performances each night. You'll see these young athletes perform bareback, saddle bronc, breakaway roping, barrel racing, tie down, bull riding, goat tying, team roping, steer wrestling, and mini bull riding. The NIRA, a 105c4 nonprofit organization, sanctions these events, which allow over 3,000 college rodeo athletes to earn an education while still having the opportunity to compete in their respective rodeo events. Once they graduate, they ride and perform as individuals. College rodeo is seen as a building block to pro rodeo, and you'll see these athletes and student-athlete coaches to give their very best as they pursue their goals to become pro rodeo contestants. Visit www.rodeoticket.com for tickets, which are $10 for adults and $5 for children 12 and under. Vendors, various food options, and a beer garden will also be available. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor for this event, please contact Katie Ramos or Summer Logan at the rodeo office, 928-445-3103, or email at gcregional@worldsoldestrodeo.com. I'm your volunteer, Justin. This was Northland Views. Join us each weekday for news from around the Northland. Thank you for listening.